This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. Have you ever visited the border towns of Fort Wayne, Indiana, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, or perhaps Traverse City? Now, before you get on email to tell me to re-examine my map, we do know those towns are nowhere near the geographic Canadian border. However, U.S. Customs and Border Protection does patrol these areas. Joining us now to explain how this works and how it affects Michiganders is Monica Andrade, attorney with the ACLU of Michigan. Monica, welcome to Stateside.
Thanks, April. Thanks so much for having me.
What's going on here? I thought the line between Michigan and Canada was basically through the middle of Lakes Superior, Huron, and Erie. Am I missing something?
Yeah, April, you know, I think most people would think that the Border Patrol only operates at the border or in border towns and would be really shocked to find out that they actually live in a border zone. You know, I think a lot of people think that border-related policies really only impact people that live in border towns like El Paso or San Diego. But the reality is that Border Patrol's interior enforcement encroaches deep into and across the U.S. and impacts the majority of Americans. For example, 2/3 of the U.S. population, or approximately 200 million people, fall within this 100-mile zone. And in Michigan, the entire state of Michigan, according to Customs and Border Protection, falls within the 100-mile zone.
So how does Customs and Border Protection define our border with Canada?
So Customs and Border Protection, they claim authority to, under a federal statute, to conduct warrantless searches within a, quote, reasonable distance of the border. And so the federal regulation that interprets that was issued back in 1953 with little deliberation and review. And so at the time, there were fewer than 1,100 Border Patrol agents nationwide, and today there are over 21,000. And so those outdated regulations defined reasonable distance to be 100 air miles from any external boundary. But the regulations also go on to say that the agency is supposed to determine what a reasonable distance is by considering local factors. And the regulation lists some of those factors. But what happens in practice is that the agency uses 100 miles as the default, and they have failed to consider whether 100 air miles is even reasonable. For example, in Detroit, where it's a major city that's next to an international border. And so here in Michigan, we obtained a map from Customs and Border Protection showing that it considers the entire state to be within the 100-mile zone. And so they do this by defining each of the Great Lakes as an international waterway. And so then they assert the right to measure that 100-mile jurisdiction beginning at each lake shore, including Lake Michigan, even though that lake does not share a shoreline with Canada.
What powers does Customs and Border Protection have that they might use in these areas that might be different than local and state law enforcement?
So in the 100-mile zone, Border Patrol can set up checkpoints. They can do roving patrols, which is what most of the report that we just recently released is about. But there is no border zone that is exempt from the Fourth Amendment. I think a few years ago, there was this incorrect statement going around that in the 100-mile zone, Border Patrol had extra constitutional powers, and that's not true. There is absolutely no border zone that is exempt from the Fourth Amendment. So they can do a few other things like checkpoints and roving patrols, but that does not mean that the Fourth Amendment does not apply in that zone.
How might this work out in a place like Traverse City? Do you know of any incidents maybe recently that have happened there?
Yeah, so our report talks about the case of Mr. Arnulfo Gomez. He's a client of one of our coalition partners at the Michigan Immigrants' Rights Center. His case is still pending with the Michigan Department of Civil Rights, but what I can share is what he bravely shared for the report. The video of his stop is also available on our website. And so Mr. Gomez was driving in Traverse City, which is 130-something miles from the border, and he was pulled over by Michigan State Police. You know, he handed over his Michigan driver's license, his registration, and his proof of insurance. And he was a legal permanent resident. So what some people say is a green card holder. So he had been here, had been so for over 30 years. And anyone who watches the video can hear MSP saying he's good to go. As soon as he shows his Michigan driver's license, he was told he was being stopped for a loud muffler. But given that Border Patrol was riding along with another Michigan State Police officer, they got called in. And Mr. Gomez, along with his family, had to wait until Border Patrol arrived, didn't know what was going on. Eventually, when the stop ended, no ticket was issued. Mr. Gomez has filed a complaint with the Michigan Department of Civil Rights, like I said, alleging national origin discrimination back in 2018. And so over 2 years later, that complaint remains pending. But the story of Mr. Gomez is not unique. And as the report shows, it's one that happens every day in Michigan.
Monica, as I was reading up on this situation, I learned about something called complexion codes. Can you explain what these are and how they're used?
Yeah, of course. So in the report, we include this complexion code chart that you talk about. So when we were analyzing the data that we got through Michigan Immigrants' Rights Center versus the Department of Homeland Security case, the case that all of the data is based from in the report, Border Patrol made it really easy for us to figure out what the extent of their targeting of people of color was. And so the agency uses this complexion code chart to record the skin tone of people in the reports. So for example, they list off albino, black, dark brown, dark, fair, light brown, light, medium, brown, medium, olive, ruddy, sallow, and yellow. But in 96.2% of arrests, people were recorded as being black, dark brown, dark, light brown, medium, or yellow. But tellingly, only 3.7% of those that were arrested had a complexion code recorded as fair or light.
So how does that play into possible challenges that might be made in the case of a traffic stop?
So in the case of Mr. Gomez, for example, if an individual is pulled over and they believe that the reason that they were pulled over is simply because of the color of their skin, they can file a complaint similar to what he did with the Michigan Department of Civil Rights. The way that it plays out here in Michigan is that the reason that Border Patrol is able to engage in racial profiling is because our local law enforcement agencies are calling Border Patrol into these traffic stops. So for example, what we learned from the data is that local, state, and county law enforcement agencies are deeply entangled with Border Patrol. And similarly to the racial profiling that we saw with the complexion code chart with Border Patrol, we saw some of those same patterns with our local law enforcement. So for example, 48%, so almost half of the rest of the data that we looked at, it was an arrest that was first initiated by a local law enforcement agency that called Border Patrol. So this could be that they are calling for various reasons, but the two top reasons that were cited were for identification assistance and for translation interpretation assistance. But the data there is also troubling. So for identification assistance, for example, this means that a local law enforcement agency like Michigan State Police, for example, calls Border Patrol for the purpose of reviewing someone's identity documents. But the data showed that 30% of those cases that involved identification assistance, the individual actually presented some valid form of ID, but still somehow Border Patrol was called anyway. And then in translation assistance, of the 26% of arrests that resulted from a Border Patrol agent being called by a local law enforcement agency, not a single case involved people who spoke any language other than Spanish.
So, Monica, what's your takeaway after reviewing this data?
Yeah, I think with the recommendations that we included in the report are pretty important. What we saw from the report after the data analysis is that Border Patrol engages in racial profiling here in the state of Michigan. They're able to do it because they are deeply entangled with our local law enforcement, and they operate in places far from the border. We need to figure out a way to rein in this agency, to rein in Border Patrol, and to commit to a reduction of the number of Border Patrol agents here in Michigan, and to get those outdated regulations that we talked about in the beginning limited so that it keeps Border Patrol out of our communities. For example, the Department of Homeland Security, they really need to hold public meetings to obtain public input on what distance is reasonable. Because ultimately, if a regulation outlines Border Patrol's authority, it really needs to take into consideration the impact that it has on residents that live in border communities like Detroit.
Monica Andrade is an attorney with the ACLU of Michigan. Monica, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks, April.
We reached out to U.S. Customs and Border Protection. They sent a statement about some of our questions that reads in part, "It is the policy of U.S. Customs and Border Protection to prohibit the consideration of race or ethnicity in law enforcement, investigation, and screening activities in all but the most exceptional circumstances. As such, CBP is fully committed to the fair, impartial, and respectful treatment of all members of the trade and traveling public." You can read the full statement at michiganradio.org.